This morning I will speak about Gopi Purana Dahana Prabhu. One of my god brothers who passed away suddenly yesterday. Suddenly means, oh, you didn't know that. Yeah. Suddenly means he had not had a prolonged illness. Actually, he'd been sick for years, but there was no sign of him suddenly passing away. He wasn't among the best known of the devotees in our movement. He wasn't what you would call high profile. He wasn't a sannyasi, he was a grihastha. He did travel and preach somewhere, but he was mostly living in Govardhan. And he's well known as a scholar, probably without wanting to deprecate other Sanskrit scholars within ISKCON. He was probably the most competent Sanskrit scholar within our movement. And he will be remembered for his scholarly contributions. But the devotees who will be glorifying him at this time will mostly do so not only for his scholarship, but also for his great Vaishnav qualities. One reason he's not very well known is that he was so genuinely humble. Did you meet him at all? Yeah, a few times, huh? Yourself? So, genuinely humble means he really didn't have to try to be humble. He was very much like that by nature, which generally among people who are very intelligent and learned, and those two, he was considered an authority on, certainly of translating Sanskrit and on various philosophical issues devotees would ask him about. So generally if someone's like that, they tend to be somewhat proud. But there was no trace of pride in him, nor was there this kind of imposing humility in which someone's like, they make such a big thing out of it, it's like they're so humble, they want everyone to know about it. But he wasn't like that at all. He just didn't think of himself as anything very special, which almost everyone else in the world does. He was born in 1950 in New York City, New York. Jewish intellectual, it's one of the 400,000 species of human life, or at least that's probably an inaccurate statement, but it's a certain genre or certain type of person, the New York Jewish intellectual. He graduated from some university in New York with a bachelor's degree in linguistics in 1972, and in 1973 joined ISKCON. And probably from the beginning he was got into Sanskrit and has been serving Srila Prabhupada's mission through Sanskrit scholarship pretty much ever since. So that's like almost 40 years. Yeah, that's not very good, is it? Yeah, he dedicated his life to Srila Prabhupada's mission, which, of course, you could say that about a lot of devotees, but actually not that many of Srila Prabhupada's followers did that. For whatever reason, maybe, many of them got sidetracked into secular activities to maintain their families or whatever. That actually happened to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu for a short time. That shortly after Prabhupada left, he worked for a few years on the translation of the Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada translated the Bhagavatam up to the 10th canto, chapter 13, and the rest of it was supposed to be done by another of Srila Prabhupada's disciples who, for whatever reasons, didn't take that up. So a team was there of Hridayananda Maharaj, who I believe learned Sanskrit, particularly to take up this service. Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, who was a seasoned Sanskrit scholar, and Dravida Prabhu, who was BBT editor. So much of the translation work, actually, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, he translated the texts, the verses, and the commentaries, and Hridayananda Maharaj, taking that as source material, produced commentaries, and Dravida Prabhu worked on the English editing. That's a rough overview of how it was done. Gopi Pranadana Prabhu himself did the writing of several of the last chapters of the 10th canto, including the third chapter from the end of the 10th canto is Prayers of the Personified Vedas, that's correct, which is difficult philosophical section of the Bhagavatam, and has extensive commentaries which actually require to understand them at all. And first of all, apart from understanding Sanskrit, one has to have a background knowledge of Indian philosophical systems. So Gopi Pranadana Prabhu translated and presented those purports, which is no easy job to render all that in English. So he was doing that, and what happened, because he was married, and he went after that service with the BBT producing the Bhagavatams. What happened one time was the erstwhile Harikesh Maharaj, who was also from New Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, from the Henry Street Temple days of New York, but he was based in Europe and he practically never went to America. So he phoned up Gopi Pranadana Prabhu at one point with some question. He wanted to ask him some technical question about Sanskrit or something. So he managed to get his phone number, and then he asked him what he was doing. Gopi Pranadana Prabhu said, "Well, I'm working in a computer company," although he had no background. In those days, there were computer companies, I mean, it wasn't such a big thing as it is now. But due to his brain power, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, with no background in that, he'd got into that field. and was doing that, and the Hare Krishna said, "Why? What are you doing that for? You know, why, you know, such a waste to our movement for someone who's as talented as him to be working for some beef-eating malechas with no gain to the world." So he said, Gopiranda Prabhu said, "Well, you know, I have to support my family." And Hare Krishna Maharaj immediately made some arrangement that he could be full-time engaged in the mission again. So practically all his life, since 73, he was fully engaged in the mission. He translated some works. Did any of you read his Brihad Bhagavatamrita commentary? No. It's really a classic. I mean, the book itself, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami, itself is a classic. It comes in three big volumes, the English translation, with commentary by Gopi Prandan Prabhu, and it's almost all redacted from Sanatana Goswami's commentary. But the scholars who have written the forewords for each volume are full of praise for how he managed to do that, how he managed to convey the thoughts of Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami made his own commentary on Brihad Bhagavatamrita. How he was able to convey those thoughts with precisely in lucid English. I mean, the quality of scholarship, in translating and rendering the work as it is, that also requires, of course, the realization of the translator. It's not just an academic job to translate, and the quality of the English is just delightful to read. Of course, that was enhanced also by the lot of work put into editing it by Jayadvaita Maharaj and Keshav Bharati Maharaj. But, I mean, however good an editor is, I mean, you can't make a, you know, you can't dress up a monkey to look like a beauty queen. The source material has to be good, and it stands as a testimony to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu as a devotee and as a translator and as a scholar, that devotees of the caliber of Jayadvaita Maharaj and Keshav Bharati Maharaj put aside probably some years of their life to edit his works, and the combined result was a testimony to the devotion of all three of them. They could work together on produce. I mean, you have to read the book to appreciate it. It's really a landmark in our society, and that sets a standard of excellence that others who may be translating or writing can aspire to. So that was a great work of his that was published, that will stand for maybe hundreds of years before, I don't know, English, the present day English will become archaic at some point. But anyway, we can say it's a lasting testimony to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's scholarship and devotion, and how he was blessed by Srila Prabhupada and by Govardhan and by Sanatana Goswami to produce such an excellent work. So another published work of his is Sri Krishna's Dava by Jiva Goswami, which is in one sense, we have to be very careful how we say this, but it's not as theologically an important work, but that's all. He also rendered that very nicely. That was also published by the BBT, as Brihad Bhagavatam is also written by the BBT. Other books that he translated were Laghu Bhagavatamrita of Srila Rupa Goswami and Tattva Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami with commentary. He actually translated Tattva Sandarbha many years ago, but it was difficult to get anyone to edit it because the editor would have to enter into the intricacies of that philosophical system, and to find anyone qualified and prepared to do that was very difficult. So Dravida Prabhu was editing that, and Laghu Bhagavatamrita he was also editing. They hopefully those works will be published posthumously. Presumably they will be in due course of time. It makes it a lot more difficult when the author himself has passed away. He planned to translate, or he wanted to see that all the sandarbhas, the Shat Sandarbha, the authoritative and seminal books of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, which define the philosophically what the Sampradaya is, the Shat Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami. So that's a very big work to do that. He didn't expect to do it all himself, but he wanted to train others to do that so they could translate from Sanskrit. It's obviously a very specialized service. His dream, that was his dream, to have a school where he could train men as Sanskrit translators. I mean, that obviously requires not just expertise in Sanskrit, which in the modern age is rare to get anyone who's even going to be intelligent enough and diligent enough to study Sanskrit and become competent in it. But they also have translation means, Vaishnava translation means one has to be very pure, without any personal motives. Then only will he get the blessings to be able to write in a manner which is pleasing to Krishna and beneficial for the world. If writing means an exhibition of one's egoism, that's just more. It cannot be any benefit to the world. It's just another exhibition of egoism or violence against others, even if it's supposed to be Vaishnava writing. So that was Gopi Prandana Prabhu's dream in the service of, he wanted to do that in the service of Srila Prabhupada. His one prominent feature of Gopi Prandana Prabhu's personality is that he's just completely and unquestioningly dedicated to Srila Prabhupada and to ISKCON, which again, especially among Sanskrit scholars, that's not so common, because of course Sanskrit scholars themselves are not very common, but It often happens that devotees, they learn little Sanskrit and then they think they know better than Prabhupada, or they think that, oh, Prabhupada didn't know how to translate properly, or this or that. But Gopi Pranadana Prabhu was unquestioningly loyal to Srila Prabhupada and to Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON. And he wanted, his dream was to train some men, the next generation, so that they could continue this service that he himself didn't look like he'd be able to do, to translate all the Sandarbhas. And of course there are so many other works. Last time I spoke to him, I asked him about which works did like he, because I asked him, because he's training men, so what other works would they be doing? I thought, well, there wouldn't be so many to do. And he said, well, there's Vedanta Sutra, there's the Upanishads. You know, I was thinking of what are the important works of our Sampradaya. Oh, some other books that he translated for the BBT were Narada Bhakti Sutra and Mukunda Mala. The parts of those which Srila Prabhupada translated both of them, but just a few verses. And the rest of them he translated, and then Satsarup Maharaj edited those translations and wrote commentaries for them, and they were published by the BBT. So that's also his contribution. So Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's dream was to do that, to train men, and close that door. And that came to fruition just a few years ago, maybe no more than 5 years ago, when Gopal Bhatta Prabhu became instrumental in organizing and importantly funding the Bhagavad Vidya Pit at Govardhan, where Gopi Pranadana Prabhu acted like a traditional guru, in as much as he lived in the Gurukul. Actually, he lived just close to it, walking distance. He lived with his students, and he trained them in Sanskrit and in Shastra. That's what he did. And he was a traditional guru in the sense that he really gave himself to the men he trained. He really wanted them to get it so that they could take up Srila Prabhupada's service in this specialized and very important way. I visit him there a few times. I sent more men to him than anyone else, I think, right? Because I wanted them to. I wanted some of my disciples learn Sanskrit to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission, and I was very confident that by sending them to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, they'd not only learn Sanskrit, but they'd have his association and imbibe the right attitude for learning Sanskrit and not become a puffed up rascal. So I met him there a few times, and he was always, of course, very friendly and open, but he wasn't the kind to just hang around and chit-chat. He never spoke prajalpa or wasted time. He was busy. Like a scholar, to an outside it may think that, well, he's not really doing anything, but scholarly work takes a lot of time. So even though he was living at Govardhan, he wasn't the type who would be off on parikramas. He had his service to do, which was translating and teaching others, and he was busy. in that and completely dedicated to that. And he was living there in Govardhan in conditions that people from his background, they couldn't imagine why he would live like that. Now in Govardhan there's, there are 5-star Vairagya Mahals have been built for the people who come from Delhi and from overseas. Who Tamils don't, Mahal means like a palace, so Vairagya Mahal, it means a palace of renunciation, which is obviously a little satire there. So, but traditionally, until very recently, the only way to live at Govardhan was in a very simple way, because that's the way everyone lives there. It's a from the external point of view, it's a UP village, and not people in UP. They don't in the villages. It's anywhere in the villages in India. Well, there are some places where there are rich people, but mostly very simple conditions. So he was very happy to live like that, although with his intelligence he could and abilities he could have been living much more comfortably in America. He could have even done his school probably in America, but he preferred to be at the lotus feet of Giriraj. His house was just on the or just off, just slightly off the Parikrama Marg. So from his house, there's a nice darshan of Giriraj. Giriraj was watching over him. But I would go there time to time and give a class, not that many times actually, give a class in his school. And he was so humble, he'd come and listen to my class, even though he himself was so learned and so competent to instruct everybody. The last time I saw him was, when was that? Sometime last year, or maybe even the year before. And I asked him, how much more work do you expect to do? And he cheerily said that, well, I think I have another 20 years of service left. Well, I doubted that, because he was about 60 years old, and he really looked it. I mean, his health was not good. Living at Govardhan, and especially living with cows in his house, it wasn't good for his, I mean, it's a very difficult climate in Govardhan. I believe in the Guinness Book of Records, it stated that it's the hottest inhabited place on earth. Because it's UP summer, plus Govardhan, all the heat from the rock radiates back. So it's like you get double heat, and temperatures above 50 are quite common there in the summer. So it's extremely hot. And it's very cold in the winter. And, the water is not drinkable, although people, according to health standards, it's very pure and spiritually, but according to medical standards, it's probably not drinkable. So he was always suffering from asthma, or asthma, as it's called in Indian English. And generally he'd always be coughing, and apparently he passed away from an asthma attack while chanting japa in the morning. He was alone in his house. So, I doubted that, and he just went. I didn't say that to him, that I doubted it, but it came to pass like that. He loved to preach. He saw his service, even though it was somewhat withdrawn from the day-to-day life of the hurly-burly of ISKCON, very active preaching. He saw everything that he was doing as preaching. He would regularly go to Delhi for giving lectures. Actually, he just, when he passed away yesterday, he'd just come back from Poland, where he'd been on a preaching with Indrajumna Swami. And he was just about to go to China. He regularly went to China and for preaching. So, in between, Krishna or Govardhan took him away at his home at the lotus feet of Govardhan. Of course, if he'd have passed away anywhere in Poland or China, that would have been glorious. But he lived in Govardhan, and he left in Govardhan. And if you leave in Govardhan, that means you don't really leave anywhere. You just go to Govardhan. That's all. Where are you going? I'm going to Govardhan. Oh, okay, very good. Go back to Govardhan. So, he was learning Chinese, and he was brilliant, you know, in languages especially. That was one specialty of his. One feature of him is that he was so absorbed in his study and didn't like to get involved in management at all. And somehow or other, there was something about him that, even though he himself was very fixed and calm in his own mind, there was always chaos around him. So that school in Govardhan is like, you know, always some kind of chaos in management, but he himself is just holding it together by his own dedication. I mean, he was going to go on serving there. That was his commitment to do that. Even though, like I say, there's always kind of chaotic condition around him. He was unique. I mean, there's no one like him. And irreplaceable. Well, there will be others who translate and who teach Sanskrit, although they won't be the same as him. He has trained some, among all the devotees who came to him for study, many learned Sanskrit. Many, not many, I mean a few. But among those, it's you don't get hundreds of people enrolling for Sanskrit studies. But some learned Sanskrit. At least one of them came out as a BBG translator, which was what he wanted. And it's your godbrother Nityananda. Matsyavatara actually had learned Sanskrit before he went to Gopi Prandhan Prabhu, although presumably he benefited much from Gopi Prandhan Prabhu's association and guidance. Matsyavatara Prabhu, I'm pretty sure he must be doing some translation, but I believe his main service is teaching. So, presumably and hopefully that will go on, and if somehow or other it doesn't go on under the aegis of the BBT, then, or by any other means, then certainly I'd like to see that Matsyavatara Prabhu and Nityananda Prabhu are facilitated in their service. They're both, like Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, Western bodied, who've become adopted Brijbasis. Like I say, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu he wasn't very widely known, he wasn't a very outgoing type of person, but there are a few devotees who are very attached to him, both especially I know Jambavan Prabhu and Achinta Chaitanya Prabhu, who are somewhat rejected by others in their own group, who they found shelter in him, and he was their Shiksha Guru. Our own Avinash Govinda just recently went to him, and Avinash told me that they become an important part of his life. That Avinash wanted to serve Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, so just at the end he became very much indebted to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. I was talking about Matsyavatar Prabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, and the best tribute to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu will be how these devotees and others in future, other generations, they continue to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission in this very specialized service of Sanskrit scholarship. His life is a credit to Srila Prabhupada. That may seem a strange statement, that how can he be a credit to Srila Prabhupada, who himself is in himself so great. Well, that's true, but still, just like Krishna is he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's the source of all opulences and everything that is great, but still he's decorated by flowers and jewels. So Gopi Pranadana Prabhu was a jewel decorating the personage of Srila Prabhupada. Often when someone passes away, we glorify them and we think, why we should have glorified them during their life also. But although I'm definitely not famous as being unfortunately I have a reputation of being more of a fault finder than one who praises others, but at least I had enough spiritual sense to recognize, even during Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's presence, what a great Vaishnav he was. His body was burned yesterday, and according to his desire, the plan is that these ashes will be placed in Samadhi just opposite the Bhaktivedanta ashram, the ISKCON ashram at Govardhan, just opposite that, just at the feet of Govardhan, next to the Pushpa Samadhi of Padmalochan Prabhu. Hare Krishna. So you can all you're all young devotees now. You go on steadily and gradually. In time, you'll become older devotees. So, hearing about Gopi Pranadana Prabhu is purifying and inspirational. You can follow in his footsteps. Be steady in Prabhupada's service. Our aim is not to be glorified. but if we can glorify Srila Prabhupada by our lives, that will be the best utilization of this life that we got, this opportunity that we got in the service of Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Jai Gopi Bharanadana Prabhu Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.